Hey everyone, this is Veronica Belmont, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Nerds.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 132, and we're foregoing our usual shenanigans today because we have an interview.
Yeah, Veronica Belmont is here, which is crazy because I'm a huge fan and I'm excited, and you guys may hear me gush all over the place again. Sorry.
It's to be expected. It's totally fine.
Yeah, it's all right. I actually... I too am a huge fan. I've been I used to watch Techzilla all the time when it was her and Patrick, and have been a fan for a long time. So it'll be cool to get her thoughts kind of on games and tech and other such things.
Yeah. I have to admit that I'm nervous because it's hard to interview people that are really good at doing interviews.
Yeah. Like interviewing other people, you mean?
Yeah. So interviewing people that are incredibly good at doing interviews themselves, it's really challenging. So I'm excited, but also nervous.
I was going to say, she interviews like what I would say are not generally super outgoing people. She interviews a lot of authors and stuff for Sword and Laser. And it's always amazing to see like them talk to people that and get them super into excited talking about the projects they love. Even though you know that like maybe they're not, you know, they're not used to the going out and doing the whole interview round type thing.
No, absolutely.
Well, maybe she'll help Ash come out of his shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, she sure needs it.
Well, why don't I start by interviewing you guys and find out what you've been up to this week, Matt?
Right. Oh, I'm first.
Yeah, you're first.
Special. Let's see, what did I do this week? I started my holiday movie watching this week to get in the mood, get in the right setting for Christmas.
Cool. Yep.
I kicked it off with Scrooged with Bill Murray.
It's a classic.
Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah.
It is a classic. It's it's very manic. I don't remember it being as kind of manic as it was when I watched it. Bill Murray is not kind of his sarcastic. I mean, he is sarcastic Bill Murray, but he's like super manic in it. It's weird. But it was fun. It was enjoyable. We also watched we watched the hotly debated You've Got Mail.
Oh no. It was a hot topic on YouTube this week or on Facebook.
Yeah. My sister-in-law challenged me in my love for You've Got Mail. And I smacked her down. I showed her who's boss.
You won handily.
She got mad. The secret, here's the real secret of it that I didn't use. I had an ace in the hole. If for some reason Ash didn't remember that he got me a Blu-ray. I actually had pictures of what she gave me and what I got from Ash, like saved in my SkyDrive.
That's convenient.
From Christmas. So I was just like sitting, I was like, she's like yelling at me that she got me the Blu-ray and that she's been a fan and all this stuff. And I was like, okay. And in my head, I'm like, I have pictures of all this, so I know you didn't. But I'm
ridiculous.
Bring Ash. But yeah, so I know everybody doesn't know what we're talking about. But essentially, a friend of ours posted that she loves You Got Mail, and then it turned into this huge commentary between me and my sister-in-law and my wife and Ash and a few other people about who loves You've Got Mail more. So,
all right,
it was pretty good,
productive,
pretty epic.
Week.
Other than that, I think that's pretty much it. You know, the usual other things that I've been up to. Gaming wise, not too much. Playing a lot of that Tiny Death Star for unknown reasons on my phone.
Tap tap tap.
Tap tap. Wait 15 minutes. Tap tap again. Which is hardly a game, but it's fun nonetheless. How about you, Scott?
Heyo. I've been playing Assassin's Creed 4 on PC.
Nice.
And it's actually enjoy it. I mean, there is, you do get into some, it becomes monotonous sometimes if you're trying to collect everything.
Oh yeah.
And I tend to do that. I like to try to get 100% sync in Assassin's Creed games, which probably makes me like certifiably crazy, but, it's part of like the OCD in me. Like, and that's usually, that tends to be the only game series where it still holds true. I've kind of broke free in other in other games. I used to collect everything in every game, and I broke away.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the famous one? Crash Bandicoot? Is that what you...
Yeah, like I had a real problem with Crash Bandicoot on N64. It was...
Jeez.
Or no, Banjo-Kazooie.
Banjo-Kazooie, that's what it was.
That's the one. Yeah, it was real bad. And I think that's where I realized I don't need to do that anymore. So
maybe calm down a little about
it. But I'm enjoying the game. And oddly enough, I remembered that a while back I wrote an article about like five things that, you know, they could do to fix Assassin's Creed 3. And I realized that a couple of things that I wrote are actually in Assassin's Creed 4.
Good.
Not
awesome.
To say that like they read the article, but you know, it's nice. Well, that
I'm sure a lot of people probably had the same gripes that you had, you know?
Yeah, because I realized that even when you're not connected to the game, you can use your mobile device or your tablet to do the fleet activities. Like even if you're not, even if you don't have the game running. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can like gain money and kind of grind away at that when you have like when you're not at your game console, which is awesome. So
that is really cool.
Yeah.
Have you played the multiplayer at all?
I have not, but I've played multiplayer installments in other Assassin's Creed games.
I've heard they really nailed it down on this one, so I didn't know what your thoughts. I knew you liked it before.
I'll probably check it out after I finish the main campaign. So
yeah.
I've kind of been wrapped up with that. I think, I don't know, just set up the Christmas tree. I think they said that last week. And I think the movie that we're going to go to first is Elf. That tends
Elf.
To be our...
Yeah. It's a good holiday movie.
Yeah, nice. My personal favorite is White Christmas, but I'm waiting for it to get cooler here in Florida before...
Yeah, it's only 90 degrees.
Yeah.
No big deal.
It is
How
really...
About that?
It's kind of insane right now.
Yeah. Okay, so Ash.
Well, work was brutal. Worked a lot. This week. That's not exciting though, but I did start Battlefield 4 finally. I picked it up.
Are
when
you
I picked
able
up
to
my...
play that game? I heard it's
problems. Well, it has some problems, but as someone who grew up playing PC games, it's still not the same amount of problems that I had with my PC. So I know
you didn't
PC...
have to put like a floppy disk into your Xbox One with like expanded memory configurations.
I didn't have any like weird graphical like clipping errors due to an outdated graphics card or anything weird like that. Anyway, Battlefield 4 looks gorgeous. I hopped straight into the multiplayer. I did have some... I dropped a few times while playing Conquest. But honestly, I've probably played for about 4 hours total, which isn't a whole lot for a Battlefield game. It's, you know, just as fun as you remember it. Graphically, it's unbelievably gorgeous. The new Frostbite engine just is, it smokes on the Xbox One and just, it's phenomenal.
And it's 64 players now, isn't it? Online?
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, just when matches start off and you see the whole team like running toward a, you know, a capture point, it's kind of ridiculous looking. You're like, oh my God, there's so much going on. And then they added dynamic weather effects. So there are a couple maps where there's storms brewing and like giant waves and aircraft carriers and things like that.
Have you brought down a skyscraper yet?
No. I'm really terrible at the game.
Okay, fair enough.
I am nowhere near bringing down skyscrapers. I just get killed pretty much constantly. For some reason, I like to run around with a shotgun, which seems like maybe it's like the secret hillbilly in me. I don't know. But everyone else is running around in tanks, and I'm like, you know, running around with flip-flops and a shotgun. But but it's so much fun. I mean, I hope everybody hops on and... Eventually, some of the server gripes are fixed and everything is stabilized. But I don't see what the internet fervor is all about. I guess it's supposed to be worse on the PlayStation 4 than the Xbox One right now. And I guess it's also been deleting people's single player campaigns.
Oh, good.
Yeah, which is bad. But I didn't even bother with a single player yet. I'll probably do that a little bit later. But
it'll all be fixed in time.
Yeah. So far, I'm very happy with it. I mean, it's definitely a Battlefield game, and I've been playing those since, you know, like 2003. So
yeah. I feel your pain way back in Battlefield 2 days. My favorite thing to do was try to run around with the things that weren't weapons to kill people. So, like, the engineer had a welding tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, like, if you were a medic, you could, like, kill people with the paddles, the defibrillator. Like, those are my favorite things to do. And I think that as long as you're enjoying what you're doing in the multiplayer aspect of the game, then who cares what your KD ratio is, bruh.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they did an incredible job with the dangling carrot, because you could probably spend months on this game and not unlock everything. So, I mean, there's always something to go for. It's just really well designed that way. So
awesome.
I'm pretty happy with it. I'm pretty happy.
Hey, well, do you know what I think our listeners will go for?
What's that, Scott?
That would be our interview with Veronica Belmont, coming up right about now.
All right, so we're here with Veronica Belmont, who is sick, but...
Jeez, but, just out it right away.
No, I'm just outing it because I feel bad, but she showed up anyway, which is just awesome. So thank you so much, Veronica, for coming by.
Of course, it's less the sickness and more the broken heat in the house that's getting to me right now. Yeah. But I think the heat, the computer will hopefully warm my tiny office and then all will be well.
Yeah, so it's incredibly cold in San Francisco right now, right?
For us, we're giant babies though, so it's like 40 degrees and we're all freaking out.
We share your pain in Central Florida. It's the same idea. I wish we could send you our heat because it's oppositely bad here.
I know. I actually looked at the temperature map earlier today, and it's like blue and purple up in the northwest, and like mostly all the way across the country until you hit like Mississippi, and then it's red.
Hot. Red
everywhere southeast of there. So yeah, I'm kind of jelly.
Well, thank you again so much for coming on. And I was telling these guys right as we were getting started that of people that we interview, people that interview other people professionally, those are the most intimidating for me because you're really good at interviewing people. And so when I have people like yourself on, it's always kind of intimidating. So I just want to let you know that I'm spooked.
Don't be spooked. It's like, I mean, the thing I always tell people is you're just having a conversation with like-minded people. Yeah. So it should never be something that really, you know, freaks you out.
Indeed. Indeed. So we like to always start with what our guests were like when they were young, because I always like to get a feel for their childhoods, and it kind of lets me understand that a little bit more. So what was young Veronica Belmont like? Were you an adventurous kid? Were you a nerdy kid?
Well, I mean, all kids are weirdos, right? I mean, that's kind of like the gold standard. Like we all kind of look back at our childhoods and say, I was such a weirdo. So I think that's kind of true across the board. I was a huge tomboy, like really, really big time tomboy. Very rough and tumble, like out in the yard, in the fields, like beating up the other little boys and playing Ninja Turtles and basically being destructive in many ways. But yeah, I was really into computer games, like super early computer games. My mom and dad both worked for Coleco and Hasbro and other toy and game companies back then. So I was pretty early into that stuff. So that was kind of where I got my start in my interest in technology and kind of tinkering and playing with stuff. Awesome. But yeah, I kind of took myself very seriously.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Were you a quiet kid or?
No.
No, so you're an extrovert.
I was, yeah. I've always been a bit of an extrovert. It's weird because I'm extroverted, but in social situations, I still get kind of weird.
Yeah.
And that was especially bad in college, but it's gotten a little bit better, having grown out of that a bit. But yeah, I think I was a pretty fun kid. I had a really good childhood. It was a blast.
That's cool. So when you were little, what were some of your favorite books and stuff? And when you were in perhaps elementary school, what do you remember reading? For me,
Babysitter's Club.
Really? For me, I remember Flat Stanley. Do you remember Flat Stanley?
Yeah, I do.
Flat Stanley was like. It was funny because I told my wife this story the other day, but I was so into Flat Stanley, I collected all of those in like first and second grade. And then we found like a cache of them at a garage sale a little while ago, and I grabbed a bunch of them up. But that was my elementary school book. And then I think when I was about 8 or 9, I found X-Men comics, and my life changed forever.
I was a voracious reader. I was like, I don't know if you guys had like book lists that you had to get through in the summertime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I would read that, and then I would read like the next two grades up worth of book lists. I spent like all my free time and free classes and in the library. I remember specifically finding like the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series in the library. Yeah. And like, we weren't really supposed to read them like when you're like in second grade. I did anyway and scared the crap out of myself. To this day, I still look at those covers and I'm like, what were they thinking putting these in an elementary school library?
Didn't they just announce they're making movies out of them too?
That's a bad idea.
I think they might be. Yeah.
Did you guys ever read those? My Teacher is an Alien. Did you ever read those books? Do you remember that series?
I don't think so.
I don't think either.
That was something that, you know, you remember when they would bring like the book drive to your elementary school, the little book sale thing. Like that was the thing that I picked up during those things. And Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh, I was so excited about the little handout they would give you for the book fairs, and you'd be like, oh, I mean, at least I did. I don't know. But I get so excited about it, and I'd start like circling things and like planning my book fair out.
Had the book list, like they had the book club, and they would come like they'd be like magazine pamphlets, and you would be able to choose like two books a month. We had these in, oh man, I haven't thought about this since I was probably in school, like doing it. But you could like, I think your parents like signed you up for a subscription. It was like $10 a semester or something, and you could pick like two paperbacks a month, then they would arrive at your classroom, and it was like super exciting.
Oh, that's really
so cool.
Yeah, and you never knew what you were going to get because it was all like stuff that wasn't in the library. But it was pretty rad. I loved reading.
Yeah, well, I when you said when you were young, of course, your parents worked for Coleco, but eventually, I'm assuming you graduated to Nintendo and or Sega. Mm-hmm. So were you a Nintendo kid or a Sega kid? Because there's always
a divide. I have only ever played ColecoVision. That is the only console I've ever owned.
Still to this day.
The only one to this day. I pretty much just play Frogger.
You just play your own games now.
Yeah. I went the Nintendo route. I was a Nintendo girl.
You're a Nintendo kid?
Yeah, my best friend Chris down the street had the Sega. So we played all that stuff over at his house. But yeah, I did Nintendo. I had I had a lot of video games. Like that was something whenever I was brave or did a good job at something, like a video game would be my gift. And that wasn't cheap back then. They were still like $30, $40.
Yeah.
I specifically remember getting Super Mario Brothers 3 for going to the dentist.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So that was super cool. I had over 50 Nintendo games, which was kind of a big deal.
You had me beat big time.
And then I did the, you know, the progression. Every new console I would upgrade. I think the only console I never owned, but my brother did have, was the GameCube.
Oh, okay.
That wasn't mine. That was John's. But it was he let me play it anyway. Good kid.
That's cool. I like how you say that as if he's gonna come down on you if you. Yeah. Dad, the GameCube.
That's not accurate. Factually accurate. That was my GameCube.
He's gonna like update your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, liar. GameCube
was not.
You know, it's funny that you brought up the price of games because I remember being a kid and like honestly my brattiest memory. I think I was maybe 7 or 8 and I was in Toys R Us with my mom, and she said she was gonna buy me a game for something good that I did, but I wanted two games very badly. And I remember having like the shittiest tantrum begging for two games for like a half an hour, and finally she just made me leave. But games were really expensive back then. I mean, I think they were still $30 or $40. I mean, it's not like they've really gone up all that much over the years.
No, yeah, it's kind of it has somehow escaped inflation, and the games are still kind of similarly priced.
Yeah.
But I remember I found a $20 bill in an Arby's one time.
Nice.
And like I could not. I brought it up to the register, and I'm like, my mom made me bring it up to the register. Mm-hmm. I must have been about 8 years old, and they were like, no, we don't. Nobody said they lost a $20 bill. You can just keep it. And I thought that was like the most money I would ever have in my hand at one time.
Nice.
Probably okay. For the rest of my life.
Right.
Here's an important question.
All of this money.
Are you curly fries or potato cakes?
Oh man.
What I'm sorry, what is a potato cake?
For Arby's? Yeah, because you mentioned Arby's.
Oh no. That is probably the only time in my life I've been in an Arby's.
Oh, okay.
I found the $20 and that was it. That's all I needed to know.
Oh, bonus. No. That's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to say probably curly fries because I do enjoy curly fries.
They are quite delicious.
Yeah. There was not – Arby's was not a big thing where I grew up. So there was one downtown in the Hartford Civic Center, and I think that was the only one I ever went to.
I mean, you should consider going back.
So it was not easily accessible.
You're one for one for finding $20 bills inside of Arby's.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
Maybe there's some sort of magical vortex, so every time you walk into an Arby's, there's always $20 waiting for you.
That'd be a great short story, actually. Like, if only I had known that was the one thing that would happen to me for the rest of my life, that every time I went into an Arby's, I would get $20.
Yeah, that's your mutant power. But
yeah, all my problems would be solved.
You heard it here first.
So speaking of childhoods, we were always curious where our guests were when they first started using the internet, because we're roughly around the same age. And I remember the first time I really got on the internet, I was like one of those like prodigy AOL kids. And before that, I had like a local BBS that I was on, like total super nerd. So do you actually remember your transition from a world before the internet into a world with the internet?
I totally remember. I mean, we must be the same age, because all of that is also true for me. I ran a BBS from my computer.
Did you really? That is so
cool. Yeah, when my parents would go to bed, because we only had the one phone line.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
so, for sure. That was the only time I could hook it up. And then, yeah, we did the CompuServe thing. We did the Prodigy thing. We did the later, we did the, you know, hourly AOL type deal. But yeah, my first memory, I remember the first website I ever visited was discovery.com.
Nice.
Which is weird considering I worked for them for a while. But yeah. That was the first website I ever went to. The first URL I ever typed in to go to a site outside of like the AOL portal or the Prodigy portal, whatever was, you know, on that homepage. But yeah, I used to do like Microsoft Comic Chat and like,
I remember that. Absolutely. Yeah.
That I would love someone to make an emulation of that these
That'd
days.
Be so cool.
I would be all over that. It was kind of like early Second Life in a way. You had your little avatar.
Even the AOL chat rooms they felt really, once, you know, AOL took off, and it seemed like everybody like in my high school all of a sudden had AOL, and everyone was using AIM all the time. And
ICQ.
ICQ.
ICQ, uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I still remember my ICQ number.
3696060.
6273245. No, 6273257. Is that right? Somewhere. Shit, you got me. Damn it. I thought I remembered it.
Yeah, I was pretty early. I had a 7-digit number. That's pretty low in the grand scheme of ICQ numbers, probably.
Well, speaking of low, weren't you like one of the first like five people on Twitter on the planet? Something ridiculous like that?
Not quite. I think I am actually in the first 13,000.
Oh my gosh, that's ridiculous.
I'm going to check that, because then they actually have your number like somewhere on your profile page. I can't remember where it is. It's been a long time since I've tried to go look at it. But it's, yeah, I joined in October of 2006.
Wow.
And I actually briefly worked out of the Twitter office I was just renting desk space. And I was, you know, back when they were in their first tiny little office. Mm-hmm. And I felt bad, because people have asked me like, oh, what do you remember about the early days of Twitter? And like, what did you hear? What were they like? What were they talking about? I'm like, we never spoke. Like, I would go in and say hello. My desk was like in a loft space. So I wasn't like surrounded by them. And yeah, we were friendly. We were all friendly, but I didn't like, listen in on their conversations and try to learn secrets. And also I had signed an NDA when I went in there, so I'd probably be like legally culpable for any secrets I divulge now. I don't know, there's like a statute of limitations on that kind of thing. But it was, yeah, I got in pretty early.
It was amazing that you had
that was the total TLDR version.
It's amazing that you took your first name, that you had the foresight just to take that as your handle.
Yeah, right?
No, I didn't. Actually, my original handle, it was like my Skype handle. And then I had that for like a week. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to try to get my first name. And I plugged it in and it worked. And I was like, okay.
Wow, that's amazing.
Nice. Nice.
So, yeah, I did not have the foresight, unfortunately. It came a little bit later.
Matt's got a friend who's got Pope.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Weirdly enough, I don't know how he got it, but he got Pope.
My husband's Ryan.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, he got that later, though. The person who had Ryan stopped using it, and so they actually turned it over to him.
Oh, that's really cool.
The only cool handle I ever got, I started playing World of Warcraft the day it launched, and I know, and I was an orc shaman, and my name was Chief, and I had it for like 5 years, and everyone's like, how did you get the title Chief? And I'm like, just my name. I felt so cool for so long.
That's pretty cool.
You played for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I played for, how long did I play? I played for like 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I started in 2005 and I was in a guild. Technically I'm still in the guild, I guess, if I went back in, but me and Scott Johnson and Randy all started a guild called Alia Iacta Est. And I think it is still the largest North American guild.
Wow.
We had to break it up when they put the guild cap on there. But I think last time I checked, and it hasn't been for a while, we had like 7,000 registered members and like 5,000 active players.
Wow, that's incredible.
So yeah, it's a huge guild, and it has spread to many other different games and platforms, and we all like hang out at BlizzCon and
that
stuff
is
like
really cool. I miss my guild. We weren't obviously not that large, but we were an East Coast guild. We were on Manoroth was our server, mm-hmm. but we had like, I don't know, 100 plus people at one point, and the best part about it is just people from all over the world. I got to know them really well, you know, and it just got to be so once I started teaching and I was working like 10, 11 hour days, I couldn't run a guild anymore. It was just way too much.
It's a lot. It's like a full time job.
Is, yeah, I was doing like dragon kill points and running like molten core raids. And like mm-hmm. it was like honestly, it was a full time job. And I missed the hell out of it, though, to be honest. Like I still, when we first started this podcast, I was still kind of thinking of going back. Yeah. And now I'm like, I can't do it anymore. It's just too much. But
I can't even imagine having the time to be the way I used to be with the game. It just is, the number of hours I put into that thing is staggering now.
Absolutely.
I can barely find the time to even play console games and doing something where you feel like you have to make an investment, like a weekly time investment, mm-hmm. To yeah. really get the most out of it is a different kind of animal.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And podcasting takes time too, which is a great segue to your podcast, Sword and Laser.
That's very professional.
That's very Tom Merritt of you.
So Sword and Laser, you just had a successful Kickstarter mm-hmm. for Sword and Laser, the new season of Sword and Laser. What made you go for Kickstarter for some funding for Sword and Laser? Well, actually, let me ask this.
Sure.
For those of our listeners who don't know exactly what Sword and Laser is, do you mind explaining it to them?
Yeah, sure. So Sword and Laser is a podcast / book club / video show that I host with my friend Tom Merritt. And we've been doing the book club since 2007 and the book club podcast since 2008. And yeah, it's a big community. All of our forums are over on Goodreads. And every month we pick a science fiction or fantasy book. We do two book club podcasts a month and usually two author interview podcasts a month. And yeah, we read along with the other people in the group. We take questions from the audience. We talk about the latest in science fiction and fantasy news. Just talk about other stuff we're reading in general. And yeah, it's one of our favorite things. And then last year, we got picked up by the Geek and Sundry YouTube channel to
awesome.
Do a video version, which was great.
Those folks are very nice, by the way.
They're wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it went great. We were super excited about it, but then they had to kind of rejigger their the shows that they had on the network, and so unfortunately we got booted. But we were like, we still want to do this show. We still have this set. We still have people
awesome.
Who are like excited about it. So we thought, well, sponsors aren't exactly throwing themselves at us. We have Audible and Squarespace as sponsors for the podcast, the mm-hmm. audio podcast. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really try to find sponsors for the video show. I think we were just like, let's just do a Kickstarter. If people, you know, people seemed bummed that the show got canceled, let's see if they're willing to put their money where their mouth is and mm-hmm. and help us make another season. And we were totally blown away by the response. We were trying to get $20,000 to shoot 6 episodes. And our first stretch goal was going to be $30,000 for 12 episodes because we could kind of bulk shoot a bunch of stuff together. And yeah, we ended up getting almost $50,000. So
that is so awesome.
Congratulations.
We're really stoked.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So pretty soon we'll start production again, and we're hoping to shoot, I think, late winter, early spring.
That's excellent. So do you guys ever have authors that approach you that want to come on, or do you guys typically approach the authors that come on Sword and Laser?
It used to be that we would approach authors, and recently, I don't know what happened, but we've been getting a ton of requests to be on the show, and it's been pretty mind blowing and exciting because I think it kind of made us feel like we made it.
No,
like
absolutely.
Now PR people and authors are reaching out to us to be on the show, and so that's been amazing. And so we've had a lot of great authors on the show actually. Anne Leckie, who wrote our last book, in Ancillary Justice, she came on the show and actually did the wrap-up episode of the book with us, which is unusual because if we didn't like the book, that could have been a problem.
Yeah.
A little awkward.
Yeah.
But it worked out great. Yeah. And so we got to take almost in real time questions from the audience about the book and ask the author who wrote it.
That's very cool. Were you guys at all intimidated with using Kickstarter? Were you afraid that it wasn't going to go through, or were you afraid that people might take it the wrong way?
I was nervous. Tom has done a bunch of them for different projects, so I think he kind of, you know, made me feel a little bit better about the whole thing. I was sure. I mean, I was really hoping we were going to get to 20,000, and I was like, all right, maybe, you know, maybe it'll start slow and then it'll pick up towards the end, and then we were funded in 3 days.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
that's
awesome. I felt pretty better pretty soon. I didn't have to worry about it too much.
It sounds like the general consensus with Kickstarter is like you're throwing a party and you just hope that people are going to show up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're like, well, I bought all this punch and cocktail, you know, like in sandwiches.
Please come partake.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to eat these sandwiches for the next week. I hope people show up.
And we actually had this guy, David Michael, who is a pro, like, Kickstarter guy. And so he helped us plan out everything from like what the rewards should be, how much they should cost. He's helping us manage all the add-ons that people can buy at the end. Now that the Kickstarter is over, people can actually say, okay, I pledged $5. Do I want to add on a t-shirt to that? Do I want to add on a beer stein to that? And then they can pay like, you know, $10-$20 onto what they've already pledged. So we've actually made a good amount of money just off of that too, off of new t-shirt designs and posters that Scott Johnson drew. So we're super excited to get those out the door.
Excellent, excellent. Well, when do you guys say you're starting production, and when do you think people can actually watch and listen to season two?
We don't have dates yet for the shooting. We're hoping it's going to be like February. And then, of course, it'll have to go into pre-production. But the turnaround time for these episodes isn't too long. So it could be as early as spring.
Cool. Very cool. Well, let's segue into vaginal fantasy. so you giggled first. So I feel okay because I was going to try and keep a straight face. So let's talk. Your podcast with Felicia Day and Kyla Casby and Bonnie Burton is Vaginal Fantasy. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who don't know about Vaginal Fantasy, why don't you go ahead and describe a little bit about Vaginal Fantasy to them?
Sure. Vaginal Fantasy is, it was all Felicia's idea. She is the brainchild of this one. So she's also really big on Goodreads. And she had created a bookshelf of a genre that she called Vaginal Fantasy. And this was a subgenre of fantasy where there was romance elements baked into the story. So it's basically like science fiction and fantasy romance / erotica. And so it's a very similar premise to Sword and Laser. Every month, one of us picks a book and an alt pick in case people read fast or just want to try something different from what the main pick is. And yeah, we do a monthly Google Hangout where we drink a lot of wine and talk about the book pick. And then we usually do something fun like casting choices, like who in the real world would we put into these parts for the book? And you know, it started out kind of funny, like tongue in cheek, but the community is huge now. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people who watch the show live and then watch it on YouTube later if they missed it. And it's fun because it's kind of a stigmatized section of literature in a way. I mean, it's hugely popular, but it's also kind of jokey. Like people kind of make fun of it. But at the same time, there's some really great stories out there. There's some really cheesy ones, which are fun to kind of joke about and have some fun with. But there's a lot of great books out there too. So we take it seriously, but we also have fun with it. I think that's the best.
I remember hearing an interview with Felicia early on, when Vaginal Fantasy started, and she was joking about how what the Kindle really did for her was enable her to read these books wherever she felt like reading them,
right?
Without feeling weird about it.
Totally true. Bonnie is so funny because she doesn't have a Kindle. She refuses to get one. She likes to read the books. And so she'll be sitting on the Muni, which is our local bus system, and with the book in her hand. And she gets so many comments from either other women on the bus or people who just think the cover's funny or ask her what she's reading. And so she's definitely a little more ballsy probably than me or Felicia or Kylo would be.
Not to be too podcast inside baseball, if you will, but how have you guys liked Google Hangouts? How has that worked out for you? Do you feel like you're connecting with the community more? Is it, you know, kind of ease up the process as opposed to trying to organize mm-hmm. Skype and all that?
Yeah, well, we've been doing it for almost a year now, and it's held up pretty well. We've only had one disaster, and that was somehow the show got lost and just never showed up on YouTube.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, no.
And fortunately, I don't know how the timing worked out, but someone out there was recording it. And
oh,
so
nice.
They sent us the video file, and so we were able to upload it later, which was a total lifesaver.
Thank God for the one creepy fan out there.
I know that one guy. He's like, what? I don't know.
Good job, Ash.
I was just recording Vaginal Fantasy, guys. Don't mind me.
But yeah, they've added some new features. Like, I love the live Q&A feature that they built in. We don't use it as much for Vaginal Fantasy, but we use it a ton for Sword and Laser when we have authors on Hangouts, which we've been doing more and more recently. It's really great to not only get questions in advance on Goodreads, but also to just take some questions live for people who want follow-ups to some of the things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I don't completely trust the service. I feel like it could kind of fart out on you at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worked out pretty well. I don't have too many complaints. I wish there was a little more post production you could do to those files, like on YouTube afterwards, like trimming them. Maybe you can. I just haven't figured out how.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get like a weird, awkward intro that I wouldn't mind cleaning up a little bit. Like, oh, is it live? Yeah. Is it
what?
Starting?
We've been recording for 10 minutes. Yeah.
Oh crap.
We've lost a number of our shows before. The worst is we called into Edmonton to talk to someone from BioWare and lost half of the audio file, and it was just it was heartbreaking.
Who are you talking to?
It was Mike Gamble, from one of the producers from Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so sad, but he was nice. He let us call him back.
Nice.
Yeah. So Matt, I know you have some questions about tech that you wanted to ask Matt.
I do. The first one's kind of a jokey one, but like you and Ryan, your husband Ryan, who has been involved in the tech scene also for a very long time, I just imagine that you guys must just have a ton of like outdated tech just laying around your house. Like, what do you do at a certain point with your, you know, whatever version of phone that doesn't even get made anymore? Like, you know, weird MP3 player.
I don't know. If someone can figure it out.
Does it look like the Jawa sand crawler inside your house?
It's a nightmare. It's pretty bad. Well, because part of the problem is review units. So you get review units, and then they don't really ask for them back a lot of the time. The good thing to do, I mean, neither of us work in reviews anymore, but people still send us stuff, is to send it back. But sometimes things fall through the cracks, and then you have this thing, and you've had it for 2 years. You don't feel right selling it because
it's like morally,
you didn't buy it.
Right, yeah.
So usually what I do is if I have a thing and it's been sitting around for a really long time, I just give it to one of my friends. I'm just like, here is this thing. You need a new phone. I have this phone. Take this phone. And then that's kind of how it works out. But we have an awful lot of stuff around the house. A lot of stuff we buy, because I mean, we buy a lot of stuff too, or have in the past.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to find a good solution for that. There's an app that this guy I know in San Francisco started called Fobo. And it's like a way to get rid of your used gadgets, and they'll take it away from you and give it to someone or sell it to someone, and they'll pay you money for it. It's kind of like Gazelle, but in person.
Oh, wow.
And I've been planning on, like, I have this whole box of stuff that I want to do that with, and I just haven't gotten around to it. And I could do eBay, but eBay is like such a time sink. It takes forever to set up a decent looking eBay page. And
we were just talking about that too, because I have a Roku too. Like, I ended up buying a Chromecast because I fell in love with it, and I got a Roku too. I have a Roku too. It's just like sitting now, and I don't really know what to. It's not like they're worth you know, I mean, they're like $30 maybe. I don't know what I'd get for it. But then, like, eBay is such a weird place now. It's like everything, they're like kind of new, but also kind of still garage sale-y. But then the garage sale-y prices are still really high. I don't understand it anymore.
And people are like professional eBayers. And so you feel like you can't compete against it because they're so good at like selling crap.
No, it's true.
Making these amazing eBay pages, and you're just like, I can't compete with this. I'm just a guy. I'm just like a one person deal that's trying to get rid of this iPhone 4. Yeah. Like, how do I compete against this industry of eBay sellers?
Yeah,
it's weird.
Then if you do Craigslist, you have some creepo showing up at your house.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I did a Craigslist for all when I left college in Boston. I just basically said, here are the things. Here are all the things. Come to my house and take them away. And whoever showed up first just walked into the door and took the thing. And I was like, I just sat there with like a beer for like 4 hours and like watched strangers come into my apartment.
A beer and a baseball bat, just in case.
Pretty much. A BB gun.
That would make a good short story.
That would make a great short story.
Yeah.
I was not murdered that day.
You were not murdered.
Confirmed.
What's your kind of these? I guess we'll just kind of I'll fastball some of these, but like, what is your kind of take on this new wearable? I have you in the room. I want to ask you all these tech questions. Sorry,
wearable like, tech. You know, I'm into it.
Like Google Glass. Have you tried out Google Glass or no?
I have tried it out. I don't find it comfortable or
really
very seamless to use yet. And I think it looks terrible. But otherwise,
like the Galaxy Gear, the Sony's got to watch out now too, right? I think.
Yeah, I'm kind of into that stuff. I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, I've been a Fitbit user for like 2 or 3 years, and I feel totally naked if I'm leaving my house without it. And I think really good, functional, but still beautiful wearable tech is kind of what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
I feel like the Galaxy stuff, like, it's almost there, but it's still a little bit too big, a little too masculine for me, a little bit too clunky.
It's not very elegant either. Like it's got that big rubber strap on it. And it just feels like, I don't know, it was weird to me. I agree on that. But the Google Glass, what always has weirded me out about it is I lived in Brooklyn for a couple of years, and I just couldn't imagine, people did it, but I couldn't imagine getting on the train to go to work in the morning and like have that. I feel like I'd get punched. I feel like it would just happen. Because it's weird. It really is weird when you're standing really close to somebody wearing Google Glass. It's still off-putting. It is not normal yet.
It makes you like not trust them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you doing weird augmented reality things right now? What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Are you recording me? Are you using like X-ray vision on me? Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm dying to try one out. I'm just to see, you know, how it actually functions. And every time I see somebody with it on, I don't get angry at them. I get kind of envious just because I want to mess with it, you know.
Do you want to be a cyborg, Ash?
I do want to be a cyborg, Scott. That'd be wonderful.
So the last one, kind of like normal question, I guess, but is like, do you have do you have like a can't live without device or app or anything like that that you think everyone in the world should be trying out or using at this point or no?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess, I mean, I could live without my Fitbit. It's just something I've become very accustomed to using. I am totally addicted to my phone though. My phone is like an extension of my arm at this point. It's kind of creepy. Yeah, so I think that's my smartphone is probably my can't live without device, which is really pretty typical.
I think so.
I think we're there with you.
I did something. I'm going to say it was crazy. I switched from Android, which I had been using since the HTC, whatever the first one was called.
G1.
Yeah. I'd been on Android forever, suffered through the early days. and then last year, for unknown reasons, was like, I'm gonna try a Windows phone, and I got a Windows phone, and like, it just, not that the phone sucked, the phone was fine and it did what it needed to do, but it had like kind of left that extension of my life, you know what I mean, like, because I was so entrapped with Gmail and all the stuff, and Google and Windows were having a little pissing match or whatever, and like, I felt lost half the time. Like, I stopped using my phone entirely. I would just sit and it would just be in my pocket. I never touched it or anything. It was really odd. And it made me realize, I recently went back to Android, and it made me realize how much I was tied to it, that I kind of felt lost without it at certain points. I get really frustrated for dumb reasons over dumb Louis C.K. bit, like the map app wouldn't work immediately, and I'd be like, why isn't this magic technology working immediately?
It's going to space.
Yeah.
I had the similar issue. I did a basically dropped my phone in the ocean, my iPhone. My iPhone 5. And so I had to switch to a phone, but it was in like, this happened in like early July, and I knew the iPhone, the next iteration, was going to happen in September. So I wasn't about to go buy another iPhone when I knew another one was coming out right away. So I'm like, all right, I've got this, you know, HTC One sitting around. I'll... As one does.
Of course. Like, in your magical room of devices.
Nerd world problems. Yeah. And so I switched to, I went got a SIM card for it down at the AT&T store, and started using Android for the first time in my life regularly. And I had a very similar thing. I just kind of stopped using my phone as much. And it was weird. And I got the same thing. I got frustrated. I felt like it wasn't part of my, like, I wasn't, my brain wasn't in the Matrix in the same way. Like, I feel like my brain is in my iPhone. Like, I can make it do the things I want. I can, the speed is enough that I feel like it's working the way I expect it to.
Yeah.
With the Android phone, I'm like, I don't know how to do things. Like, what is happening right now? Yeah. And I knew how to do this stuff. It just wasn't instantaneous. And that in that now is the measure of how well something works for us. If it's not, doesn't happen within like our tiny window of expectation, you know, suddenly you feel like you don't know how to do the thing and it's not working the way you want it to. So
It's kind of sad too, because I feel like, you know, when I go to conventions in the past, or even kind of the nerdier conventions of like Comic-Con or whatever, it's just a bunch of people. When the, when everybody walks around, they just, everybody's just staring, like, especially
bone zombies.
Oh my god, it's unbelievable. It's just like last one I went to, last tech convention, I can't remember, maybe South by Southwest or something. It was like everybody just staring at their phone and walking around, and I'm like,
I'm sure you
so
guys,
sad.
I'm sure you guys have not been to a high school in recent years, but unfortunately, that's where I work most of the time, so. So every time the bell rings, you look down the hall and all you see are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people staring down at their phones. They've magically learned how to like navigate without bumping into each other. It's fucking amazing. Because it's like hundreds of people staring at their device in their hands and no one talking to each other and just kind of, you know, meandering from class to class. But yeah, absolutely.
It's like when you go to a concert too. When you go to a concert, no one's watching the concert. Everybody's watching the concert through their phone, you know?
It's right. True, too, yeah.
Like, it's it's a memex. It's exactly what Vannevar Bush described in 1945. We have these little, like, we put our brains into the phones and they become, you know, essentially our memory extenders. And that's, it's so true now. And it's just really interesting.
Guys, I'm sorry I took us down such a dark path.
No, it's true though. Like, I mean, if I see someone, if I'm driving in my car and I see someone crossing the street looking down at their phone, like while they're crossing the street, I want to hit them. Like with the car. Yeah, I just feel like you should be paying attention to the world around you right now. Like, you could be in danger. I could be the danger that you are in. You don't know. You're not even looking.
Danger.
I am the I'm the one who knocks into you with my car. But yeah, it's phone zombies make me crazy. I have a very strict pulling over situation when I'm walking down the street and I need to look at my phone. I pull over. I go into like an alcove. I get out of the immediate way of people who are trying to get places. Because I don't want to be the lady that walks into a freezing cold fountain or like down a manhole. Actually, you'd probably see the manhole.
Yeah,
because
probably.
You'd be looking down.
Probably.
Has San Fran been infected by the massive Beats headphones all over everywhere?
There's a lot, not as much as in New York. I see them
it's
a lot more
crazy,
when I'm in New York. Yeah, it's pretty intense. Those young people and their Beats.
It is. It's popular with the teens now too.
Is it?
Yeah.
Man, high school is just like a mini city, isn't it?
It is. High school is like a mini city with lots of germs and anger.
It's like a microcosm for the rest of the world. Yeah,
it is. Yes. It really is. Let's talk about fun stuff now since we're all sad. So we want to hear what you think of the Xbox One, because we heard that you picked one up, and I want to hear your first impressions of it. So did you manage to set it up without it exploding and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, it is working properly. I can't take the credit for setting it up. Ryan did that. I was away in LA doing the Doctor Who live stream stuff.
Awesome.
When the Xbox arrived. So he set the whole thing up, and it's working great. It recognizes me when I walk in front of it and says,
isn't
hi, Veronica.
Isn't that freaky?
It's
it works
freaky.
Really well. It works really well, though. And, like, I was really impressed with how well it recognizes me, even in the dark, which is kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. Or when you're sitting, like, on the couch. Yes. Like, not, yeah, it just, it sees you. Yeah. I'm a little unhappy with some of the voice commands. I'm basically, after, like, 2 minutes screaming at it, like, different sets of commands, like, trying to figure out what it wants me to say to do the thing I want it to do. And I know there's probably, like, a list of things I'm supposed to say to it, but I never looked at that list or, like, interneted that list. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, like, yelling different things at it, trying to get it to turn off. I'm like, shut down.
Yeah, I don't know.
Turn
that.
The fuck off.
How do you turn it off? Yeah. That's the one I was trying to figure out today, actually, just before we came on here. And I couldn't. Is it shut down? Scott will know it. What is
it? I feel like there
is. Shut down works for me.
Shut down works?
Okay. Shut down works. Turn off does not work.
It's very
specific. At
least
for me. It doesn't like turn off or go away.
Go away.
Go away.
Go away, you Xbox.
I
feel like the voice commands, they work. I mean, like you, I don't know all of them yet. And so it's kind of, you know, I feel like I'm trying to figure them out as I go. But it definitely, this new Kinect works so much better than the old Kinect. So I feel like I'm actually using the voice commands more than I did before. And, I feel like it does pretty well for jumping around through different between different apps rather on the system, which I think is pretty neat.
Yeah, I learned Show Me My Stuff from the commercial.
Oh, I don't even know that one. What is that one?
It takes you to like your main menu, like all the things you can do.
Oh, okay.
Like if you have two people signed in at the same time, like you can say Xbox Show Me My Stuff. And it'll show your, like anything that you've pinned to your screen will be there. And then the other person on the couch can say the same thing. And then it switches over to that person's pins and like recent games and stuff like that too.
Well, all I know is, my wife loves to harass me with it. And she likes to compete with like who's controlling it. So I'll say something and then she'll say something completely different. And it'll just be jumping around between different apps.
I do. Ryan will be playing like a particularly intense like Ghosts match or something. And I'll be like, Xbox, turn off. And then I forget that doesn't actually work. And so
that's
I have
amazing.
To say shut down. And that would be funny. I wonder if it'll do that mid game.
It probably would. Yeah. Just
that's
to harass,
pretty. That's a dick
harass
move.
Your husband.
Yeah. That would be awful.
I just shared a useful image for everybody in the chat. Uh-oh. I'm totally derailing this podcast. I apologize, but
it's okay.
It didn't work for me. It says it failed.
Okay.
Try again. Well, anyways, we'll it exists that, somewhere.
There is a list of Xbox voice commands.
I'm going to Google that file name and then I'm going to find it.
Excellent. Have you gotten a chance to play any of the games on it yet?
Yeah, I'm playing Black Flag right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. We are.
Pretty
it's pretty awesome. So I think Scott's. Almost halfway done with it.
I'm playing on PC.
Strangely you're playing
enough.
On PC. I played it on the one. I just finished it a couple days ago, and it's phenomenal. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying. Okay, so here we go. Here's the commands. We can say Xbox on, obviously. Oh, turn off is the command.
Oh,
or so they say. I mean, who knows?
I don't think it listens to me. And then sometimes I'll say things, and it'll be like listening. And I don't think it's listening to me. Ryan uses record that a lot for recording
just
snippets.
You at that point, it's like sure I'm listening, whatever.
The sign in has worked. We don't have a TV set up yet in it.
I like that the command for to get it to stop listening is stop listening. It used to be cancel, but now you just say Xbox stop listening.
You have to say it with frustration in your voice as well.
Stop it!
I'm
God.
Trying to talk to my mom. God.
Yeah. But yeah, Black Flag is super fun. I mean, it basically feels like every other Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah. It does.
But it's got some fun new stuff. I like the boat battles. I mean, we had a little bit of those before in 3, right? Yeah, we had the boat battles in 3. But this, I do enjoy pillaging and plundering ships.
It's a fun period in history to run around, you know. They did do a spectacular job with those boat battles. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do with the franchise and see, you know, because I there have been reports that they're eventually going to end it. It's not going to go on
forever.
Or they might spin it off as like a complete pirate only series and not assassins anymore.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder how well it's doing compared to other titles. Because I actually really liked Brotherhood. I liked like some of the side stuff you could do by like sending your assassins out on missions, and you can do that with the ships too. But it's not quite as fun thinking about like building up your assassins and sending them out into the world.
I want to say Brotherhood was my favorite of the Ezio stories. That one was just incredible.
As far as like the narrative and the gameplay,
that was good.
That was my fave.
Which one? The ladies love Ezio. Mario reference in it, right? It's a me, Mario. That was in one.
Did
of
it?
Yeah,
I think it did.
I don't remember that.
Excellent. So we have to ask you some Mass Effect BioWare questions because we know that you are a Mass Effect fan. Who did you perhaps romance in the Mass Effect trilogy? Who was your love?
We should also say that we have a lot of Mass Effect BioWare.
Yeah, that's why we're asking
listeners.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah, they.
Oh, geez, that's a good question. It depends on which title.
Okay.
Okay.
I definitely tried to romance Liara.
Did you? Okay.
I think I was successful. I tried to romance. I think I romanced Jacob.
Did you?
Oh, wow.
A Jacob lover.
Or maybe he was too. He might have been too good. I think he was too good, and he didn't like me because I was too evil.
Oh, so you played a renegade character?
I think I played. I think I was like just to the renegade side of neutral, and I think I might have been too. Still, that was like too bad for him. I really wanted to romance Thane. I can't remember if I succeeded.
Thane was pretty awesome. I can't say I blame you on that one.
I think he bought me wine. I think we had a date.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember how. I think you could romance Thane in the second game, right? I don't even remember.
I think so. I'm pretty sure he takes you on like a dinner date, like in the Citadel.
Oh, okay.
And I remember there being wine involved. And I don't know if I'm making that up or if I had a dream about that.
I always stuck with Liara, so my life was pretty simple. So
I definitely went both ways. So I was, whatever would talk to me, I would go for.
And I'm assuming you play as Femme Shep, right?
Yes. Yeah. I made a creepily accurate version of myself as Shepherd. So that Ryan was like, okay, that's weird.
Oh, weird.
And now you're romancing all these people as you. Awesome. I think you need to seek psychiatric help.
I did one of those where I made a guy that I thought looked like me, and then I turned to the side and I'm like, whoa, no, that is not. What did I do to my face?
Yeah, I tried the same thing the first time, and it was totally like a vampire version of myself.
Oh, man. Dented in the wrong areas. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There was EA for a while had this thing called, maybe they still have it. They have this thing called Game Face. So if you play a sports game, you can upload front and profile pictures of yourself. And then EA Game Face will analyze the photos and then construct an avatar for you for like Madden Football or FIFA or whatever.
And I think I did that for the boxing game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was in Fight Night, too. And it's like so. Yeah. It's so creepy. It's like Uncanny Valley creepy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's you, but it's not quite you. Or maybe like there's a feature that's just off. It's really bizarre.
It's just with dead eyes.
Scan my doll's face in and see what would happen.
Dead cold eyes.
Just hold my dog up to the scanner. What is wrong with this man?
They tried to like humanize it, they has like weirdly dog features, but it's a human face. Like I would love to see what that
I would love to see that too. Someone please send us that, please.
Oh, man.
So when we have our guests on, we always ask a signature question, and it's a pretty basic question just about your secret nerdy hobbies, collections, or passions. Do you collect anything or secretly do anything or have any compulsive disorders that you want to share with our listening audience?
Compulsive disorders.
That's generally how the question is answered sometimes.
It is. It is.
Yeah, I like geocaching.
Do you?
That's one of my secret nerdy passions.
That's an awesome one. I haven't done that in so many years.
Yeah, I really love it. And unfortunately, none of my friends want to do it with me. So I usually never end up doing it because I'm like, let's go find a geocache. And they're like, no, that's weird and creepy and you're weird. So I don't do it as often as I would like. Compulsions.
No, you don't have to answer compulsions. I was just feel free to ignore
unless
that.
Unless you feel the need. I mean, it's a safe place.
No, I don't really have too many compulsions that I can think of. Collections. I'm looking around my office to see if I could collect. I used to collect pigs. Like pig things.
Really?
Yeah, and little ceramic dogs.
Oh, that's cool.
Like tiny. I don't collect either of those things anymore. Like
the little schnauzers and stuff.
Like all little ones, like the tiny little ceramic dogs that you can get at like antique stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I would put them in a cabinet. It's like my little doggies.
Do you have any pets?
My little friends. Yeah, I have a cat, and I have we raise guide dog puppies.
Oh, that is wow.
Really? That's
yeah, awesome. So we're on our second full-time dog right now. Her name is Bodega, and she's super cute. And they're all either yellow labs, black labs, or golden retriever mixes. And so this one is half golden retriever and half yellow lab, and she's super sweet, and she's still a pretty small baby. She's like 4.5 months right now.
That's really admirable. That's super cool that you do that.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, they're just such great dogs. They're super, super awesome to hang out with, and they're really well behaved. They're kind of like bred that way.
Yeah.
So you can't screw them up too much. and then when they're about 1.5 years, they go off to their full-time guide dog training up at the campus in San Rafael. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it can be kind of hard because especially if you're like really attached. Fall in love with one. But I have heard, and I cannot confirm this, but it is told that if you bring your dog up to the San Rafael campus to bring it in for its training, your final goodbye, you can get to like play with the tiny puppies in the kennels and like roll around on the ground and like get covered in puppies. And so that kind of like eases the brunt of the separation.
That's awesome. She's
like, oh, I can take one home. Yay.
Yeah. We are all dog people too. So we all have pets
I have cats, but
you have cats.
I love cats too,
and a dog.
And a dog.
Well, does your cat just kind of deal with a new puppy coming into the house every once in a while?
She hates the dog. She's like the old matriarch. She's like 11 years old, and she's just not at all interested in the puppies that want to play with her. She just hisses at them, and you know it's good because they're supposed to ignore cats. So if she wanted to like hang out and play with the dog, it would be really difficult for the dog to kind of ignore cats. She's definitely puts Bodega in her place. She'll like hiss and like trying to hit her. She has little nail caps on though, so she can't hurt the dogs or hurt us. Like little Lee press on nails for cats. They work great. It's not exactly harmonious, but it works.
Indeed. Thank you so much. Do you have any projects that are coming up that you are allowed to talk about, or any URLs where people can find you, or whatever you want to plug right now?
I'm not really on the internet.
No. Where can people find you on IRQ? There you go.
Yeah, ICQ.
ICQ. There you go. I'm blending
ICQ,
IRC. Yeah.
IRC. Yeah. I'm Veronica on Twitter. All of my links to my stuff are at about.me/Veronica. And so we're coming out with season 2 of Sword and Laser. We're also coming out with a book, a short story anthology, made by Sword and Laser listeners and readers. So it's 20 stories, half science fiction, half fantasy, and we're hoping to come out with that in the next couple of months. We're working on the album art right now, and not album art, the actual book art, cover art right now, and we're really excited about that. And that's cool. What else? I just found out that I'm going to CES again for my ninth year in a row.
Ninth in a row, wow.
Yeah. And I can't say who I'm going with, but it is a tech outfit. And so I will be doing tech coverage from CES.
Excellent. Nice. Excellent. Well, yay. Thank you so much for coming on our show. It's been an absolute blast. And I think the listeners are absolutely going to love it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was great. You guys are hilarious.
Oh, thanks. We try.
Sometimes too hard.
Yeah, we do. Okay, we're back from our chat with Veronica Belmont, and that was a lot of fun. She's awesome.
Yeah, she was great. She's super cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I love the talk about the old days of BBSs, and every time I hear about somebody, it's amazing that she ran one, but because I didn't tell the story on the podcast, but the one that I was a part of, we used to have to go to the guy's house and pay him in cash to be part of this BBS, and I'm not – I shit you not, he would answer – the door just in underwear. He was like this old guy with like really long hair.
Wow.
And he always answered just in his underwear. And we were all like, you know, 15. So our parents would drive us, you know, up there, and we'd have to hand him the cash. And he'd be like, thanks. And it'd give us like another month of BBS time. But those were the old days, man.
I think I just found my ICQ number also.
What is it?
I don't know. I mean, like, I have two numbers here, so I need to confirm this, but how many digits is it supposed to be?
It's 7. So mine, I just remember mine is 6274257. Oh, how I miss the days of ICQ and makeoutclub.com.
Makeoutclub. Wow.
Oh, man.
So that was fun. What are we going to do now? This is unprecedented.
I think sit for a little while.
Let's just sit and hang out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should just kind of wrap things up, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, next week we're actually going to have actress Amy Acker back on the show. And you guys know her. She's currently starring on Person of Interest. And you guys may have seen her in Much Ado About Nothing, which came out earlier this year, which is directed by Mr. Joss Whedon. And she was on Angel and Alias and a whole bunch of other stuff. And she's coming back on the show, which should be great. I'm excited to ask her about pickling.
Yes.
That's currently the only question I have prepared. So I'm going to have to do a little work. Because
pickle cast.
Pickle. Yeah. We'll just talk about pickling the whole time. So Amy Acker will be back next week. This has been episode 132 of the Rated NA podcast. You can find us on the Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. We're on Facebook, and that's /Nerd Appropriate. And you can email us all directly. That's Matt, Scott, Ash, and Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
See ya.
Coming up right about now.
Sweet.
You like that? How was that?
That was good.
That was good.